Hey guys. Welcome to the show. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Oh man. All right, I admit it, I got a cold. Hang on, I gotta cough again. So, wow, I just realized how horrible my lungs feel once I started talking. All right, well, don't worry, it'll be fine. And I already instructed my immune system to genocide all the germs away, so they're working on it. Typically, they do a pretty good job. Sometimes I get a little bit of a cold, but usually it's like short-circuited, it's over by sundown kind of thing. You can't catch me, man. Well, we'll see. Anyway, other than that, everything's horrible. How are you guys doing? So as soon as the show was over yesterday, there was a massive, gigantic, horrifying massacre in San Bernardino, California. The county. And anyway, so what happened was, is this guy and his wife with him, wearing body armor and toting either AKs or AR-15s. For some reason, people can't tell the difference. I'm not sure what's the hold up there. But anyway, they went into his place of work, which was apparently like a local healthcare bureaucracy of some kind. And they killed 14 people and wounded another 14 or something like that. And then they got away and they went straight home and then got in a car chase and a shootout with the cops, and the cops killed them. And one of the cops was wounded there at that point, something like that. They let them get away for a while there and then they went home. I think maybe someone was saying that was because they wanted to watch it on TV. Then I saw this morning somebody said they had GoPro cameras, so God forbid if they uploaded the video of their massacre to YouTube or something like that. I hadn't seen that on Twitter, so hopefully they didn't take it that far. And then, so, the question on CNN, of course, is since this guy was Middle Eastern, was this a terrorist act or was it a workplace shooting? Maybe it was a little bit of both. One of their expert guests last night said this could be a mashup of workplace violence and terrorism. And it's kind of funny where everybody's going, we're waiting to find out if it's terror or not. Well, are you terrorized? Are you terrified? Are you afraid? Are you waiting for instructions from your government to decide whether you're afraid or not? Are you waiting for your government to tell you what they think they need to do about it? Oh, man. And then, it's funny, you know, I spent a lot of my life saying there is no right and left. All that is an illusion. It's all just freedom and slavery and whatever. But, boy, is there a right and left in this country. And when it comes down to it, they got a lot of consensus about just how powerful the national government should be and what all it should be up to. And they just only kind of differ in how those things are implemented, and that's about it. But to them, it's everything. And of course, you have a couple of issues in there like abortion, which are pretty all or nothing gigantic issues to make the culture war line stark. But even though, hell, even the right, the Republican right, they have consensus on abortion with liberals too, even on that issue. When Bush was the president and the Republicans controlled both houses of Congress and the Supreme Court, they didn't try to outlaw abortion. They need that issue. Why else would working class, rank and file people ever vote for them if it wasn't for fake issues like that? But boy, on Twitter, well, I follow liberals and conservatives on Twitter, and libertarians, of course. And, boy, are they just cookie-cutter folk, man. They think what they're expected to think. You could program it in like an algorithm. Things happen, then they say this, or they say that, none of which makes any sense at all. Only executive branch employees should carry guns, huh? Well, this guy that did this was an executive branch employee. He worked for the health department there. And yet, the problem is that he had ready access to guns. Well, his guns were bought legally, meaning he went through a background check and whatever. You should have heard all the hype on CNN yesterday with their so-called experts saying, oh, yeah, no, there's no background checks at gun shows. No background checks at gun shows. Al-Qaeda can just walk right in there, no questions asked, and buy a gun at a gun show. That is such a damn lie. That has never happened a single time. It's a very small percentage of dealers at gun shows who are not themselves licensed gun businessmen. And even the ones who are just private dealers, nobody said they're going to just sell, you know, semi-automatic rifles to Arabs if they don't feel like it. And especially like a really suspicious one who's looking around going, okay, which of you guys doesn't require a background check? They call this the gun show loophole, where, you know, if it's just a private person who's not a gun dealer and he sells a gun to another private person who's also not a gun dealer, then no background check required, right? Like if you sell your used car to your friend before you go and buy a new one. I guess there you gotta have, it's regulated as hell, you gotta have a title and whatever. But still, no background check. And anyway, the point is, and he even said, the expert on CNN, if a father gives a gun to his daughter, and he made sure to throw that in, there shall be no loopholes. No one shall ever have a gun without an official national government background check. Well, this guy apparently had one, and no criminal record. And no legit reason to ban his guns. And I always go back to this because it's the most obvious point, but for some reason liberals just can't think of it. I think it's because they hate economics. And they just hate thinking about how things actually work compared to in their fantasies. But gun control does not apply, well, it does to some degree, don't get me wrong, but not like in left-wing fantasies, does it apply to a bunch of rich white guys and their gun collections. Gun control laws are used against poor blacks and Mexicans who can't afford to defend themselves and who get nailed and locked in cages like animals, imprisoned in real ass pound me in the ass prison for gun possession charges. Not for killing people with a gun, but for having a gun that doesn't have a serial number on it, or having a gun while their buddy was doing something else, or having a gun, etc., etc. Not using it on someone, not holding it someone's head in armed robbery, but just having one when the regulation says that's an offense and they are not allowed to have them. And especially, you know, parole and probation and all the extra restrictions on liberty that come with all of that. And so it's de facto racist, even if it's all liberals and left-wingers who support it. They just refuse to acknowledge the fact, the reality of the world that they live in. Who the hell they think is being sentenced right this second, right now? There's a judge banging a gavel and sending a black man with no money to prison for having a gun. Right this second. Oh, but you know what? How about this? Just stick your fingers in your ears and yell la 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 and just keep pretending that, yeah, one day government is going to magically make 300 million firearms disappear, and then nobody but heroic government executive branch employees like yesterday's mass murderer will have them. Nobody but the white supremacist, rapist, lawless, unaccountable cops and their unions will have guns. And then we'll have paradise because, I don't know, because I know it makes no sense whatsoever, but that's what they like to believe somehow. I think mostly they just don't say it all out loud. That way they don't have to deal with how little sense it makes, you know? you hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, man. Welcome back. Phil Giraldi is going to be on the show later to talk about the San Bernardino thing. CNN saying, oh, he was radicalized. The guy? Well, first he was him, and then he became radicalized. Uh-oh. It was like Africanized, like a killer bee. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and just save that topic till for now, until Giraldi gets here, because that's what he's on about. Oh, and I'll also ask him about his new Pollard article. I mean, we already covered the Jonathan Pollard thing with Grant Smith the other day, but yeah, why not cover it some more? Phil's got a great piece about it. All right. There's so much more to talk about, including Donald Trump, apparently, according to Twitter, right now is giving a speech to the Republican Jewish Committee about his devotion to Israel. I flipped through the channels, and I didn't see it. Chat room guys, I mean, it's not on C-SPAN, I don't think. If anybody has a link to the telecast, I wouldn't mind pumping in that audio for a minute, actually. But anyway, it's their big thing. Lindsey Graham was giving a speech earlier, so it's not just Trump today. I guess it's all of them, or some of them, or something. They're Republican candidates. Well, I don't really know what order to take all this in, so I'll just go with the notes that I got. How about that? Basevich has a new one out this morning at TomDispatch.com. Sorry, I sound boring with this cold, right? I'm all putting everybody to sleep. Sound like Stephen Wright, the deadpan humorist, only without the humor and without the cool voice. So, everybody, guess what? Today, there's a new one at TomDispatch.com by Andrew Basevich. Who's Andrew Basevich? Well, he used to be a colonel or a lieutenant colonel or something like that in the U.S. Army. And he's the author of a bunch of books. The first one that came out was called The New American Militarism. And he had a son who, I think he tried to talk him out of it to some degree, I don't know. Went and joined up the army and was killed in Iraq. So, that's his story. He writes anti-war stuff from a, not right-wing perspective, but a kind of center-conservative one. A reasonable Ike Eisenhower, sober adult perspective on our current radical madman policy of imperialism. A sensible case for disengagement. That's what you get from Andrew Basevich, and which is great, which we need. And we'll be running this tomorrow on antiwar.com. If you want to look for it there, it'll be under Tom Englehart's name tomorrow. Andrew Basevich, An Invitation to Collective Suicide is the article here. And he's absolutely right. Beyond ISIS, The Folly of World War IV. Okay, so if you've ever heard World War IV, that term before, then, well, you're very educated on this crap indeed. That is a term used by Norman Podhoretz, and James Woolsey, two of the most batshit insane neoconservatives. I think they may have gotten Michael Ledeen, another completely nutso one of these kooks, to buy into that terminology for a while there, too. But here is Professor Elliot A. Cohen, and he's one of the guys who lied us into war with Iraq, and he's one of the guys who is now part of the John Hay Institute, which is the new project for a new American century, with Elliot Abrams and the rest of the neocon kooks giving Rubio and Jeb Bush all their talking points. And Elliot Cohen is one of the guys who, from the Heritage Foundation, helped come up. And I forget now. It's been a long time, guys, but I think he was on contract working with the Office of Special Plans and the Pentagon guys, although I could be wrong about that. But I know he certainly did the study, and Greg Palast has him on tape explaining why it was such a great idea to want to privatize all the Iraqi oil into as many different foreign companies' hands as possible, as quickly as possible, to drive the price of oil straight down through the floor and bankrupt and destroy Saudi Arabia. It's a no-brainer, he explained to Greg Palast. And if I remember right, he's the guy that got all pissed off and said, "Hey, Greg Palast, that's not fair for you to secretly record me." And Palast is like, "Suck it, pal. I'm a journalist, and you fell for it, and I got you on tape saying horrible shit, and so screw you." Good old Greg, man. I love that guy. Oh, is this the tape that you didn't want me to play for the people here? Let me put it in my movie right at the beginning. Yeah. So anyway, here Elliot Cohen insists it's World War IV. He's got a new piece at the National Interest. No, sorry. The American Interest. I was going to say the National Interest published that. The American Interest. And he returns back to the old theme. It was World War IV in 2001, Cohen insists, and it is World War IV today. So let me put this in context for you, especially you kind of Ron Paulian libertarians who understand the blowback and this and that. Well, there's the famous former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit, Michael Scheuer, the guy who gave Bill Clinton, 10 chances to kill Osama bin Laden that Clinton and the recently deceased Sandy Berger and the rest of his staff refused to take. And he had actually, I believe because he crossed Sandy Berger, was why Scheuer had been exiled to the library and kicked out of the bin Laden unit. Because he was so pissed off that Berger kept stopping the CIA from killing bin Laden. And anyway, so Scheuer, as you may be familiar, if you're not familiar, Scheuer is a right-wing American nationalist. I mean, he is a Republican, but he's a right-wing American nationalist in the sense, and I don't mean like he's a raving lunatic on, I don't know, Mexicans or something. I don't know if he is or not. But what I mean by that really is he's a National Security State employee, a former CIA analyst, and his entire outlook is of America's national interest. And the rest of the world can go to hell if necessary. They can all go to hell. His outlook is, what is the interest of the American people? How do we protect them? That's his point of view. He's a former CIA guy. His job was telling the bosses, here's the truth, here's a way that you could do something about it, kind of a thing. That was his job. And the way he's put it for a decade now, and sometimes he does sound absolutely crazy on this issue, but if you listen carefully to what he's saying, there's a certain bit of logic to it. That we can either have a war or a total war. Either focus on America's enemies and get rid of them and wrap the whole thing up as fast as possible, or we can take on all of Islam and destroy ourselves fighting a billion people for the next century. And it seems our leaders are making the latter choice there. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scottwharton.org/transcripts.
Superior blends of premium coffee. Roasted fresh in Zionsville, Indiana. Darren's Coffee satisfies the casual and the connoisseur. Scott Horton Show listeners, visit darrenscoffee.com and use the coupon code SCOTT at checkout for free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Because everyone deserves to drink great coffee.
All right, guys, welcome back. Sorry, I'm talking slow and the brakes are hard brakes. And it is what it is. Hey, tonight on Liberty.me, it's me and Jacob Hornberger. Questions night. We'll be taking your calls and your chat questions and things for Jacob Hornberger. So tune into that tonight at 8 Eastern time on Liberty.me. So anyway, sorry for all the tangents. I can't help but say everything I think I know every chance I get, you know. But the point is this. I brought up Michael Scheuer to try to explain the context. Scheuer's idea is, one, we can either withdraw entirely from the Middle East, and we'll be fine. Or two, we're going to have to kill them all. Because as long as we're messing around over there, our government is going to keep creating more and more enemies. And as they continue half-assing it and doing nothing but spread our enemies around and multiply them with their every activity, they're putting the American people in more and more and more danger. And so Elliot Cohen here, as Basevich is saying, is basically buying into, well, at least the second half of the Scheuer frame of reference here. Scheuer is saying, it's either all out or all in. I don't guess Cohen recognizes the all out option whatsoever. And he says it's World War IV. It's all in. And what he means is, no, really, a world war. No more drone wars. No more special operations training up militias here or there. What we need is a World War II sized force. Millions and millions and millions, or at least a Cold War sized force. Really more. Millions more U.S. Army foot soldiers, infantry, to invade and occupy the Middle East and stay there. And no screwing around. It's going to take 50 years. We are going to probably have to level entire cities off the face of the earth and kill everybody there and start over. But that's what we got to do. That's what it comes down to. Reinstate the draft. Reorder the entire economy. You thought we had a warfare economy now? Reorder all production to our ultimate goal. The destruction and rebuilding and remaking of all of Islamic society on the planet. As Andrew Basevich says, hey, at least he's honest. The Iraq war occupation, 100,000 troops? Oh no. We're gonna need 4 or 5 for Iraq. 4 or 5 more for Syria. Hey, maybe we'll invade Saudi Arabia and Egypt and teach them to elect good men. And don't forget Iran. We don't want to start distinguishing between who's who and who's fighting on what side of what now. Just faster, please. Destroy it all. Turn the entire Middle East into a boiling cauldron that makes the current situation seem like calm seas. And then fix it for real. And then after 100 years or 75 years or some unimaginable future, as Cohen says, for the rest of his kids' lifetime, America must embark on this project of completely invading and occupying and ruling, I guess he means, all of North Africa and all of the Middle East, and kill absolutely as many people as it takes until they give up. Right? Just like the North Vietnamese. At some point, They'll just cry uncle. It's not true. That's the same thing the Israelis have been saying about the Palestinians for 50 years. How's that working out for you? They might be conquered, but they're obviously will never submit. But as Andrew Bacevich says, this man should be commended for his honesty. We don't want to hear a bunch of nonsense about national goodness. Go ahead and hit us hard. What do we need? A full-scale invasion of all of the Arab world, at least. I guess that's just for starters, before we move on the rest of the Muslims, the Berbers and the Persians, the Pashtuns and the Indians and the Indonesians. And yes, there are many, many Indian Muslims. Anyway, it's World War IV. No more pussyfooting around. And he's not just talking about Obama, he's talking about Bush. And so Bacevich is saying, okay, good. Finally, someone is honest about it. These are our choices. But what would America be after 100 more years of not even this, but double, triple, quadruple the amount of war that we've got going now? We've doubled the national debt since September 11th. How much longer do these pro-Israel neoconservative warmongers in Washington, D.C. think the American people can go with this thing? And what do they care is the real question. But, you know, for the people who buy into their nonsense, what do you think is going to be left of America by the time they're done? We have a national police force of all SWAT officers. Make them just a branch of the DOD. Turn America into a fascist dictatorship. A totalitarian security state. And it actually saddens me that everybody doesn't say this every day, but it bums me out that Bacevich doesn't make this point in here. This is all George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton's fault. This is not because of Islam. This is not a civilizational conflict. It's not even because of radical Wahhabism, as much as people like to blame the more extreme strands of Sunni belief systems. Yes, those are the people who are fighting us. But just like if America was conquered by the Russians, the Americans who are, you know, the Wolverines fighting them, they're going to be led by right-wing born-agains with guns, right-wing nationalists. What, you think a bunch of sandal-wearing hippies are going to fight them off? It's going to be the radical right are going to be the leaders of the insurgency. Okay, but that doesn't mean that they're fighting because they're the radical right. They're fighting because they're invaded, because they're conquered, because they live like slaves. It's the same thing. And what happened was George H.W. Bush put the troops in Saudi Arabia. In 1990, he put the troops in Saudi Arabia. And then he kept them there. In fact, I have the clip here where Cheney is explaining to Bill Kristol that he promised the king of Saudi Arabia, we will leave as soon as we're done kicking Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait, where we invited him.
And then the king turned back to me after a couple of minutes.
Hang on, that was too quiet. Let me turn it up a little bit.
And then the king turned back to me after a couple of minutes, and he said, okay, we'll do it. But he had two conditions. One, that you'll bring enough force to do it right and to get it done. And secondly, that you'll leave when it's over with. And I committed, gave him my word on that basis. I knew that's what the president wanted to do anyway.
The president had already, in effect, authorized you to, had said we were willing to send troops.
I was there to close the deal, in effect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
George H.W. Bush had given Dick Cheney authorization to promise the Saudi king, we'll do it right. Boy, talk about a broken promise there in terms of all the unending consequences flowing from that first Gulf War. but we'll leave as soon as we're done. And they didn't. So it ain't Islam that's your problem, it's intervention.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday. And The Future of Freedom with FFF founder and president Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment, MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com. All right, y'all, welcome back. Hey, Phil Giraldi and Judge Knapp are coming on the show today. So stay tuned for that. Here's Ron Paul versus Rudy Giuliani in the South Carolina debate, May 2007.
Congressman Paul, I believe you are the only man on the stage who opposes the war in Iraq, who would bring the troops home as quickly as almost immediately, sir. Are you out of step with your party? Is your party out of step with the rest of the world? If either of those is the case, why are you seeking its nomination?
Well, I think the party has lost its way because the conservative wing of the Republican Party always advocated a non-interventionist foreign policy. Senator Robert Taft didn't want to be in NATO. George Bush won the election in year 2000 campaigning on a humble foreign policy, no nation building, no policing of the world. Republicans were elected to end the Korean War. The Republicans were elected to end the Vietnam War. There's a strong tradition of being anti-war in the Republican Party. It is the constitutional position. It is the advice of the founders to follow a non-interventionist foreign policy. Stay out of entangling alliances. Be friends with countries. Negotiate and talk with them and trade with them. Just think of the tremendous improvement relationships with Vietnam. We lost 60,000. And then we came home in defeat. Now we go over there and invest in Vietnam. So there's a lot of merit to the advice of the founders and following the Constitution. And my argument is that we shouldn't go to war so carelessly. When we do, the wars don't end.
Congressman, you don't think that changed with the 9/11 attack, sir?
What changed?
The non-interventionist policies.
No, non-intervention was a major contributing factor. Have you ever read about the reasons they attacked us? They attack us because we've been over there. We've been bombing Iraq for 10 years. We've been in the Middle East. I think Reagan was right. We don't understand the irrationality of Middle Eastern politics. So right now we're building an embassy in Iraq that's bigger than the Vatican. We're building 14 permanent bases. What would we say here if China was doing this in our country or in the Gulf of Mexico? We would be objecting. We need to look at what we do from the perspective of what would happen if somebody else did it to us.
Are you suggesting we invited the 9/11 attack, sir?
I'm suggesting that we listen to the people who attacked us and the reason they did it. And they are delighted that we're over there because Osama bin Laden has said, I am glad you're over on our sand because we can target you so much easier. They have already now, since that time, have killed 3,400 of our men, and I don't think it was necessary.
Wendell, may I make a comment on that? That's really an extraordinary statement. It's an extraordinary statement of someone who lived through the attack of September 11, that we invited the attack because we were attacking Iraq. I don't think I've ever heard that before, and I've heard some pretty absurd explanations for September 11. I would ask the congressman to withdraw that comment and tell us that he didn't really mean that.
Congressman?
I believe very sincerely that the CIA is correct when they teach and talk about blowback. When we went into Iran in 1953 and installed the Shah, yes, there was blowback. The reaction to that was the taking of our hostages, and that persists. And if we ignore that, we ignore that at our own risk. That if we think that we can do what we want around the world and not incite hatred, then we have a problem. They don't come here to attack us because we're rich and we're free. They come and they attack us because we're over there. I mean, what would we think if we were if other foreign countries were doing that to us?
Can I have 30 seconds, please?
No, wait a second.
They are coming.
We all want 30 seconds to talk about this.
We'll yeah. Wendell, go ahead.
I think I'm going to turn to Senator McCain and change the subject, if I will.
Of course. I don't think. Of course. Don't give them 30 seconds each to talk about that. Let's hear someone refute the idea that America had been bombing Iraq for 10 years before September 11th ever happened. Everybody knows that that's true. They just never had Ron Paul confront them with it before. As simple as that. And this is why I hate Rand Paul so much. He has blown the greatest opportunity probably that any human being, any single person has ever had to advance the ideas of peace and liberty on this planet. A young Paul in the Senate running for president. He's a senator, not just, even if he wasn't running for president, he's a senator, which means every day he can just walk right out there and hold a press conference. Everything he has to say is a press conference, is a newsworthy thing. Unlike his humble father, who no one had hardly ever even heard of until he finally ran for president 10 years after coming back to Congress. He's a senator. And all he has to do is tell the simple truth. And this is why people loved Ron Paul so much. And just think about it. Pretend like you never heard of Ron Paul before in your life or whatever. Your whole life long of American politics. Can you imagine someone running for president who's willing to say, look, let me level with you, okay? Everything that's going on here is not in your best interest. These people actually don't care about you. They're spending your entire society into complete bankruptcy. They're killing people. They're making enemies for you. They throw you little crumbs of your own money back to make you believe. This whole thing is basically a scam. Get it? You all know these people are all lawyers. They're lawyers. The most terrible people in the world. And so, you don't have to believe in any of this. Right? A presidential candidate saying, oh, this? This entire white marble edifice that you're raised from birth to have faith in? Nah, that's all a bunch of crap. You don't have to. Imagine someone running for president being honest enough to just say, like, no. See, all these people are in on it against you. Don't ask me how I weasel my way in here to be able to tell you from such a position, but hey. With Ron Paul, hey, he was a member of the House. And why is Rand a member of the Senate? Because of Ron. Because Ron's people gave him, Ron's supporters gave him millions of dollars in $10 and $20 and $200 increments. Because they believe that he must be just like Ron, because how could you be Ron's son and be worse than him on anything? If anything, he's going to be even better than Ron, right? Because Ron's got a few imperfections that could be improved on, but, huh? Instead, Rand throws it all away, runs as Mitch McConnell. Runs as Jeb Bush. Runs as the establishment wannabe establishment party centrist. Party leadership choice. Even though they'll never give it to him. He's a Paul. He can never please them enough. That's been proven over and over again. And all he has to do is tell the simple truth just like his father just did. And if you can make one criticism of Ron, it's that when he's under all that pressure, he didn't say, come on, Bill Clinton bombed Iraq from a position of safety for 8 years straight, guys. You know that, right? That would be how to take advantage of the argument and spin it in a partisan way that they can accept the truth of that a little bit. Bill Clinton did nothing but provoke this attack for 8 years and did nothing to protect us from it. And then handed a defenseless country over to George Bush, who apparently couldn't get his act together in time. who kept provoking it himself with his repeated bombing campaigns over Iraq in the first 9 months of his presidency. Remember, George Bush launched his first bombing campaign against Iraq just 3 weeks. No. Wait. No, see, it was just a week and a day or something, right? Wait, let me think. It was certainly within the first month. It was like in January. Maybe it was the very beginning of February of 2001. Obama, of course, bombed Pakistan on his first day in office. Or was that three? See, now I'm getting all my days mixed up. Well, anyway, they're all a bunch of warmongers. You know that. And that's the point. And Rand could be making that point. Rand could be up there just saying the simple truth. Come on, everybody. Premise one. The 20th century existed, right? The 11th of September 2001 was not the first day in history, okay? And the American government, our public servants, had been very busy making enemies for the American people. That's just a fact. And if you're not grown up enough to accept that, then go cry in your nursery, babies. Because that's the truth. Get over yourselves. It's not radical Islam. Like, see, Rand hang himself in effigy or something. That was the stupid me. The real me has been reading Ron's essays lately and knows what he's talking about. It's too late. I know.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. And next up is Phil Giraldi. Oh, wait. First up, I meant Phil Giraldi, former CIA officer. Now he writes for the American Conservative Magazine and UNS.com. He's the executive director of the Council for the National Interest. Welcome back to the show, Phil. How you doing?
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You sound tired. Were you walking upstairs?
No, I've just been, I've been on the phone and
watching
doing interviews
news.
And
yeah.
A lot of stuff. Just everybody's interested about what's going on in California.
Yeah. Well, I want to direct people and their eyeballs over toward this article that you wrote on November the 16th. It was published here at the American Conservative Magazine, How to Counter Violent Extremism, came to mind. Just after the show ended yesterday, the news broke of this massacre in San Bernardino County. In Southern California, in the Inland Empire there, 14 people killed, I think 14 wounded as well. A husband and wife shot dead by police in a firefight on the roadside there. And what does it all mean, Phil? Tell us what you're telling them.
Well, I've been, reading everything that's coming up on it, and it just seems to me, based on my own experience, that this is indisputably a terrorist act. I can't see any other plausible motive for it in terms of the way it was planned, the way it was carried out. This goes far beyond any kind of incident of workplace violence that where somebody wants to shoot his boss. You don't necessarily go on a suicide mission with your wife. The whole thing just reeks of a terrorist incident. I think the only question in my mind is, is this something that was homegrown, or is this something that was inspired or directed even by somebody from overseas? And I guess that's what, if they do decide it was terrorist, that's something that they'll be looking into in a very serious way.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying it's my gut instinct on this one or anything, but I feel like I got to raise the possibility that an FBI informant got into this guy's life and told him how great he would be if he would only, you know, go to war for ISIS or Al-Qaeda or something like that, as they have so often done. And maybe the guy got out of hand of his informant and went and acted on it himself.
Yeah, you know, that's always a possibility. And it's, you know, we know, you and I know, we've talked about this before, how virtually all terrorism cases in the United States turn out to be a kind of entrapment where the FBI inserts an informant who's a paid informant who's basically sent in there. They deny it, but the fact is they're basically sent in there to encourage the targets to do something stupid so they can be arrested. So, you know, I wouldn't rule out anything at this point. That's an interesting point you raised.
Yeah, I mean, so far as I can think of off the top of my head anyway, Phil, all of those have been, you know, thwarted. Here's your inert powder, here's your dummy bomb switch, and this kind of thing. But it sure seems conceivable that somebody targeted could then get out of control. Seems like we've been really lucky so far that none of the entrapments have blown up in anybody's faces, but the entrapped, it doesn't look like.
Yeah, I mean, particularly you know, I keep pointing out to people, they say, well, you know, major terrorist action here in the United States is a lot less likely because our police and security and intelligence services are a lot better than those funky Europeans. But the fact is, there's also another side to this, which is once you're in the country over here, it's damn easy to get a hold of semi-automatic weapons. And so you don't even really need to be able to be a bomb builder or to have any special skills or anything like this. You can walk down to the corner Walmart and pick up your AR-15.
Yep. Well, or any old hunting rifle if you go back, you know, to the 80s or whatever before the AR-15s were ubiquitous. Still, the country's lousy with soft targets. A 9mm Glock can do a hell of a lot of damage in a, you know, if somebody's unopposed in a room full of people. I mean, and so really this goes back, and this is something that the longtime listeners of this show are just having deja vu, right? Because we've been talking about this for years and years and years, that the longer we keep up this war, the more open we are to these kinds of attacks. And it's one of the reasons to call the whole thing off rather than, you know, double or triple down. But, you know, even a friend of mine last night said to me, you know, I guess I'm starting to think maybe we do just need to go over there and kill them all or something. And I said, no, damn it. You know what? I know that you know that that ain't true and that your government are the ones who got us into this mess and it ain't, you know, religion and whatever. But people are frustrated, man. It's been 15 years of this and they just want to see an end to it one way or the other. And at least H-bombs have that kind of finality to them, don't they?
Yeah, that's. I think you know. There's a lot of. I was just interviewed by Russian television, and they asked me that question. They said there are 351 multiple killings in the United States this year. It's like one a day. I said, yeah, but you know, the fact is that these don't fit into a nice category. There are a lot of people in the United States that are frustrated and out of work and various things happening in their lives that. It prompts them to turn to an extremist solution to what they're seeing around them. And, of course, most of these multiple shootings are carried out by white Christians. Yep. And yet nobody's talking about Christian extremists. So it's, you know, the whole thing is kind of it's a war to kind of get to people's minds and condition them in a way that they're seeing this in a certain way. But you're absolutely right. We caused all this. And the big question becomes, where is the way out of this? And I don't have a good answer.
Well, so, you know, there's this quote from, I guess, Justice Brandeis, who had said that, you know, government, like it or not, for good or ill, is the great teacher, you know? Like they used to call the president the great father or whatever is what they call him to the Indians, that kind of thing. And that is how people are raised, where government, especially the Republicans, they're daddy. The Democrats are mommy. The Republicans are daddy. And they're sort of, you know, they lead us. If we don't know what's right or wrong, we look to the law to tell us, well, the law says you can't, so I guess it's wrong, that kind of thing. That's how people think. You know, mostly it's a matter of impressions, not, you know, very detailed reasoning, but just that's kind of how they go. And then that quote of Brandeis, I'm pretty sure it's Brandeis, was quoted by Timothy McVeigh, who, of course, was, you know, who had killed Iraqis in the first Gulf War. for the U.S. Army, and then, you know, was claiming he was responding for Waco and was saying, government, you're the great teacher here. You're the ones telling us it's okay to kill people all day long, so don't you cry about it when that's what we do. And he's kind of got a point. Not that I'm, you know, saying he is, you know, justifying his rationalization of his target or anything like that, but I'm just saying that is where he got the idea from. He called those babies collateral damage. Who taught him that? It was Dick Cheney's Pentagon taught him that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it's just, you know, I mean, we've reached a point as a country where, you know, you kind of have to begin to question, essentially, what is the glue that binds us together, if there is any anymore. And it's you know, a certain sense of civility that prevailed for a long time in this country, where everybody kind of had a comfortable view of government and other things and of our institutions. I mean, that just ain't there anymore, because even if I don't know anybody within the circles that I move in, various different circles, that trust the government anymore. And I'm talking about, you know, including blue collar people, including you know, highly educated white collar people, including former intelligence officers and military officers. Nobody trusts the government anymore. I mean, when Obama, you know, every time he gets up, you know, you're just waiting for the first lie to come out.
Right. Oh, yeah. And they're absolutely, you know, just daily. I saw him last night saying, you know, oh, it's just appalling that somebody who's on the no-fly list can get a gun. Yeah. Well, yeah. Pardon me, but anybody can be put on the no-fly list for any reason and can never get off of it. So what the hell is that?
Yeah, exactly. You're the guy putting them on the list.
Yeah.
Probably 99% of those people are completely innocent.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, that, and it's funny too, because the no-fly list itself is almost like shorthand for the kind of arbitrary, broad-brush, ridiculous government policies, right? Like, there's a million people on it. We're supposed to believe there's a million Al-Qaeda guys threatening to hijack our planes right now? I mean, come on. The guy that wrote the biography of Karl Rove ended up on the damn thing. And he's a Texas Democrat.
Right. Yeah. I have personal friends who are on the list and who have absolutely no idea why they're on the list. I mean,
their friends of yours might be a big part of it.
Yeah. I mean, one of them is a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant banker, for Christ's sakes.
That's interesting. All right. Everybody hang tight. We're going to be right back with Phil Giraldi right after this. It's the Scott Horton Show on the Liberty Radio Network. Yeah, wasn't that professional sounding? Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back. Talking with Phil Giraldi, former CIA officer, writer for UNS.com and the American Conservative Magazine. We're talking about San Bernardino and the fact that it was a Muslim who did it. It was his own workplace that he attacked, but he sure did attack it in a terrorist attack kind of a way, seems like. And so, you know, Ted Cruz says, we're at war. And I was thinking during the break there, what I meant to say when you were asking, you know, what is it that binds us, that makes us all Americans together? It ain't trust in the government. I hope it's not. It's trust, or at least, you know, agreement, consensus that we want to keep our Bill of Rights. That's it. Bill of Rights for everybody. Even if I hate you, you still get to go to whichever church you want because it's none of my business. And you still get to be secure in your house because the government doesn't have the power to go in unless they have a real reason to believe that there's evidence of a crime in there, et cetera, like that. And without that, we're lost. Without that, we're all at war with each other forever, I guess. And so I think that, you know what, people do believe in that. Even if they don't know what the Bill of Rights says, they think they believe in it. If you told them we're taking it away, they'd get mad probably, maybe.
or something.
Yeah, I think there's a fundamental understanding of what liberties are, and this has not been particularly well elaborated by politicians, with the exception of Ron Paul. And the American Revolution was fought over liberties, basically.
Yeah.
And it's in our DNA in a manner of speaking. But now we have this irony of two governments in a row, well, one Democratic and one Republican, that basically have been stripping our liberties from us by fear-mongering, essentially. And people haven't quite figured all that out and haven't quite put it all together, but if they did, they probably would be quite upset, I would think.
All right, well, so if we just take for granted our interventionist foreign policy is just going to be in the hands of the Kagans from now on, and there ain't a damn thing we can do about it, Phil, and we're going to have this terrorist blowback coming at us, I mean, how do we handle this without turning America into some kind of, really fascist police state? Where we really do lose our Bill of Rights, because it seems like just a few more of these would be enough excuse for our politicians to go ahead and scrap the old laws.
Yeah, I think actually this one alone might do it. I'm just waiting right now. It's been kind of quiet for the past 24 hours, but I bet you by the weekend we're going to have all kinds of crazy stuff coming out of Tom Cotton's mouth and others in the Senate. I think they're kind of waiting for something like this. So we'll see how it plays out. I would pass a simple law, essentially. I wouldn't reinstate the draft, because having been a victim of the draft myself, I know just what it's like. But I would pass a law that if Congress approves of any military action anywhere in the world, the children and grandchildren of congressmen will be required to put on uniforms and serve. I think that that would be a good first step in restoring our democracy.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, but now, so I'm President Scott, and I make you the head of the FBI or the head of Homeland Security, and I say, Phil, look, Bush and Obama have spent the last, well, Bush and Clinton and Bush and Obama have spent the last generation making enemies for the American people. How in the hell are you going to protect them without taking all their rights away? Because no other cop in this land can think of what to do except violate innocent people's rights.
Well, I think, to me, the test of all this has been, have these violations of rights actually produced a good result, meaning have they impeded the ability of terrorists to make attacks or impeded the ability of ordinary citizens to engage in these massacres? I think the fact is they haven't. So I think once you understand that, then you say, well, basically then all these laws are counterproductive. And then essentially you, at that point, get rid of things like the Patriot Acts and the Military Commissions Acts. I think that's what I would advise. I mean, first of all, you get rid of that crap, and then you stop intervening overseas. And I have a feeling that, we might actually be able to go back and become a normal country again.
Yeah. Man, I have to tell you, I can see it. And it ain't utopia. It's just stop doing all the worst shit all the time. And maybe things will be a little bit better. It's logical, It's not a panacea, but it's, it makes sense on the face of it. Like, it might work,
Yeah. I think it's empirically speaking. I mean, there's no argument to support all these intrusions on privacy and on communities and things in the United States, putting them under surveillance and stuff like that. None of this stuff has produced any good results. And I would defy anybody to tell me otherwise. I saw that idiot Jane Harman on television, I guess it was last week after Paris.
You're being sweet to her to just call her an idiot, Phil. Go ahead.
All right, I won't go any farther than that. But anyway, and she was saying, oh, yes, and we have thwarted many, many terrorist plots, but I can't tell you about them.
Yeah, right.
And this is a person who's not even in Congress anymore. And you mean to tell me that of all the many plots that they've thwarted, they can't give the public enough, they don't have to give us all the sources and methods and all the secret stuff and everything like that, but just give us some broad outlines of what exactly you guys have been doing.
There's only one, Zazi, right?
And that was a kind of a fake, too.
Yeah, the Denver cab driver?
Yeah, right.
That was like kind of a half of an entrapment. He started it and they finished it. We can blame him.
Yeah, but then even like the Boston Marathon bombers. I mean, here the Russians had passed this information on them, and we didn't use it. We didn't know how to use it. We didn't know what to do with it.
Right. So yeah, and you know, it was a cliche, but it was, you know, and you and I had said, you know, for years, especially people check the archives about how we're going to have real terrorist attacks while these guys, the FBI, are chasing their tail, doing these stupid entrapments. And then I didn't even find out until much later, actually, but Trevor Aronson was on it, that literally the Boston FBI had been in the middle of an entrapment job against some schmuck at the time that the Boston bombing plot was unfolding under their nose.
Amazing. I didn't know that.
Just like we accuse them. This is exactly how it's going to play out. And then, you know, not just some FBI agent somewhere, but the FBI agents who were supposed to be doing their job were doing this one instead.
Well, so I guess they were running an exercise in San Bernardino while the actual thing was going down, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, they were. They were. The police were running an exercise simulating a multiple shooter incident at the very same time. That's how they got there so fast.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that's why they got away, because they were on the wrong side of town.
Well, actually, that could be too.
Well, you know, and I know that people think that that's really suspicious, but I actually heard a little old lady tell CNN yesterday, I don't know if it was in reference to whether there was a drill going on, but someone had mentioned that they had practiced stuff like this before, and she said, oh yeah, we practice stuff like this all the time, and that goes back to why they chose this target. It's actually brilliant, if it was brilliant. I mean, it might just be an accident, but it seems to me like targeting, you know, local bureaucrats kind of seemingly at random, in a place like that, actually can really help to spread the terror right where it belongs and force security clampdowns in ways that are completely, you know, prohibitively expensive and terrible, right? Every county commissioner's court and city council meeting from now on is going to have their own SWAT team or what,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, it emphasizes the fact that we're all vulnerable to this kind of thing, and that's exactly what they want to, that's the message they want to get across. And, you know, well, you know, we've sown the seeds of this and starting with Afghanistan when the Russians were there. And it's just, this is something that could wind up destroying us. It's just, it's such an awful thing. And yet you never hear George Bush or Barack Obama taking any blame for, as a nation, for what we've done. We've created a horrible monster and we don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. You know, it seems like Michael Brennan Doherty and a couple others were pointing this out about Libya, but it goes for the whole foreign policy. This is such a great opportunity for any candidate, Rand or Trump or anyone else, to just completely demolish, you know, all that's gone on for the last 8 years and promise a return to normalcy. That, like, hey, look, you know what? Because of some jackasses, we got the 21st century off on the wrong foot, but it doesn't have to be this way, and so we're just going to quit.
Right.
Like, why not?
It'd have to be this way forever. No,
yeah.
That's absolutely right.
And it'd be good politics, and they got no counterexamples, right? It's not like they're going to say, yeah, but what about our glorious victory in Libya? They don't have any glorious victories. They got nothing but failure to fall back on. So,
absolutely.
If someone's willing
to take it. There are stories coming over the wire right now. California shooter apparently radicalized.
Yeah, that's what CNN says, too. Which,
yeah.
And I wonder what they're going to say. He learned to pray five times a day, or he started talking about all the dead people in Afghanistan.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks again, Phil. I sure appreciate it.
Okay, Scott. Take care.
That's the great Phil Giraldi. Man, we ran out of time to ask him about Jonathan Pollard. He's got a great piece about Jonathan Pollard at the American Conservative, too. Even better than Grant's, which is running today on antiwar.com. Phil's will be running tomorrow. But anyway, this one is How to Counter Violent Extremism. It's at the American Conservative, and we'll be right back. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. Yeah, went overtime with Phil Giraldi there into the break. You'll have to check the archives to hear the very end of that one. Up next, it's Judge Napolitano, formerly a judge of the Superior Court of New Jersey, and of course, senior judicial analyst at Fox News. Welcome back to the show, Judge. How are you?
Nice to be with you, Scott. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, my friend.
Very happy to have you here. And this piece is very important. I would direct everyone to it. We're running it on antiwar.com. Of course, the spies who ruin us. And you start the article here with the Patriot Act. And I really appreciate the fact that you start with the history of the Patriot Act and exactly the circumstances under which it was passed, not just in reaction to September 11th, but what actually was going on Capitol Hill at the time. So could you please remind them, especially for the young who might have missed it?
Well, the language in the Patriot Act was so devastating to the Constitution that the Bush administration, which had prepared this, gave the members of the House of Representatives 15 minutes to read it. Now, it's 315 pages long, so no one could really read it in that time period. I've read it three times. It takes about 20 hours to read. Not that I'm a slow reader, but it doesn't read like a novel because it essentially amends many other statutes. So in order to read the Patriot Act thoroughly and to understand it completely, one needs to have the entire United States Criminal Code in front of one and continually open up other books and see what's been amended. The bottom line is no one except a few members of the Republican House leadership had actually read this thing when they voted for it, and no one realized that there was language in there which would permit the NSA, the National Security Agency, our domestic spies, to persuade the secret FISA court to authorize the bulk collection of undifferentiated data, fancy phrase for everybody's emails in real time and everybody's texting and everybody's phone calls in real time, including members of Congress. It wasn't really until Edward Snowden's courageous revelations that members of Congress themselves realized that they had been victimized by it. Now, when the executive spies on the people, that's one problem. When the executive spies on the legislative branch, that raises a host of other problems. Bottom line is we learned 12 years after the Patriot Act was enacted exactly what the government was using it for, and none of it was constitutional. There was no debate permitted on the floor of the House of Representatives. The Senate had limited debate. The only senator who acknowledged he read it, Paul Wellstone, is now deceased.
All right, but I'm not sure who it was that coined, and boy, it'll be used till the end of time. The Constitution is not a suicide pact, Judge, and you would leave us helpless
exactly
before the terrorists.
I can tell you exactly who coined that. That is the favorite phrase of the neocon big government. We have to realign foreign countries using the military crowd in both parties, but mainly in the Republican Party. But the phrase itself was in a dissent, not in a majority opinion, in a dissent by Justice Robert Jackson in a case in 1949. In which a mob descended upon a Catholic priest because he had given an anti-war speech that the mob didn't like. Instead of prosecuting the mob that descended upon him, they prosecuted the priest. And the Supreme Court threw out his conviction, and Justice Jackson was unhappy with that and argued that in difficult times the government should be able to repress speech. That is not the law in the United States of America. It hasn't been the law in the United States of America. And whenever anyone from Abraham Lincoln to Woodrow Wilson to Franklin Roosevelt to George W. Bush has attempted to do that, they were rebuked by justices whom they appointed on the Supreme Court at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but still, the reason they got away with this is because at least 150 million people were willing to believe, and maybe correctly, that they're doing this because they mean well, or else why would they be doing it? They think it's necessary to protect us in times of change since the 1870s, etc.
Yes, you're right. The American public, Scott, has fallen for the charade that when we give up our liberties, we are somehow made safer by it. That the less freedom of speech we have, the less right to travel we have, the less right to privacy that we have, makes the government strong enough to protect us. And, of course, it doesn't. I mean, the government's first job is to keep us – well, the government has two jobs, to keep us free and keep us safe. If it keeps us safe but not free, it's not doing its job. But when it spies on everyone, it can't even keep us safe because it is data overload. It is far too much information for the government to sift through. Look at the tragedies in Paris a couple of weeks ago. The French government has even more ability to listen to phone calls and to capture text messages and emails in real time than the American government does. Did they catch these guys? No. The NSA spies on the French, and it spies on the French government. Did they catch it? No, because they're all capturing too much information. The beauty of the Fourth Amendment is bilateral. One side of the Fourth Amendment keeps the government out of the private affairs of people as to whom and about whom it has no suspicion at all. The other side of the Fourth Amendment requires the government to focus on the bad people. Both of those things, if followed properly, will keep us safe and will keep us free. But the government has persuaded the majority of Americans to engage in this diabolic trade. Hey, give me your liberty and I will keep you safe. It doesn't keep us safe. And once we surrender our liberties, they rarely come back. That's the lesson that we should learn. And that's the lesson that I attempted to generate with this piece that you're kind enough to discuss with me now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you made reference before to where even the author, Sensenbrenner, had said he never meant for Section 215 to legalize what the executive branch secretly claimed it legalized, which was the tapping of, well, not all of our phones, but basically the tapping of all of our communications in the sense of the metadata and who all is communicating with who on this massive scale. But on the other hand, they always say that. So can you explain anything more about what they've been doing with these expanded powers? Are there examples of things that would have people concerned about what's going on?
Well, the section in the Patriot Act on which the government has relied to persuade the FISA court to authorize these incredible search warrants. I mean, the first search warrant, Scott, that Edward Snowden revealed was a simple two-page document signed by a federal judge in normally signed in Florida, but sitting in the FISA court in D.C., which directed Verizon to submit the telephone records it has of all of its customers. Now, that seems like a lot. It's an overwhelming amount. At the time the order was signed, Verizon had 110 million customers, and they had 155 million phones. So without identifying the person or place they were interested in, which is what the Constitution requires, and without presenting any evidence of probable cause, a level of evidence which raises serious suspicion about a person or a place, these federal judges signed these orders and gave enormous amounts of information to the government. The same argument was made by the NSA to allow it to look at banking records, legal records, credit card records, and monthly utility bills. Now, what business is it of the government to have all of that? Some people would say, I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to be afraid of. I'm an open book. The government can look at anything they want. Well, they can surrender their own privacy. I can surrender mine, but I can't surrender yours. Privacy is a personal, individual right. It's not subject to interference by the majority. It can't be surrendered by anybody else. It's a matter of personal dignity. It's the reason we fought many of our wars, is to keep governments away from us that did to foreigners in foreign countries what we fought against them for and which our own government is doing to us now.
All right.
So when they learned that they were themselves being spied on, Congress said, well, we want this section to expire to Section 215.
All right. I'm sorry, Judge. Hold it right there. That's a great place to pick it up on the other side of this break. We'll be right back, y'all, with Judge Napolitano from Fox.
Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, kiddos. Welcome back. Now, I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show, wrapping up for the day.
with Judge Napolitano from Fox News. And we're talking about the circumstances under which the Patriot Act was passed and some of the horribleness in it and how the government took it even further than what the Patriot Act actually said they could do.
Let me summarize where we were because sure. I have to run down into a studio in just a few minutes.
Okay, sure, no problem. Go ahead.
The language in the Patriot Act, which permitted or on which the government based its "we'll spy on everybody all the time" ideas, has been invalidated by a half dozen courts. The language in the, because the courts have found that in fact it, Congress never intended all the spying. The language in the Freedom Act is very clear and crisp and precise, in which Congress does authorize all the spying. So the Freedom Act is actually worse than the Patriot Act, because the argument that plaintiffs made, Congress never intended all this spying, is now out the door. That's issue number one. Issue number two is both laws bypass the Constitution's requirement of probable cause, a level of evidence, meaning it is more likely than not that someone has committed a crime and the police or the government needs to know about it, and instead substituted a made-up standard called governmental need. Governmental need is no standard at all, because the government will always claim it needs what it wants. And yet the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, the secret court in Washington, D.C., created by the FISA Act, the friend of the NSA that has granted 99.9996% of all NSA applications, has bought this nonsense. Mm-hmm. So bottom line is we are far worse today under the Freedom Act. I hate using these names because there's nothing free about it, than we were under the Patriot Act. And I expect that you'll see a lot of challenges to this law, and I expect the law will be invalidated. In the meantime, millions of Americans will lose their privacy to federal agents in ways that the Constitution never intended or authorized.
Mm-hmm. And then, I'm sorry, I don't know how much time you have, but could you tell us real quick?
About a minute.
1 minute. Okay. Could you speak real quickly about the latest news about the national security letters and how they're being used as third-party doctrine where all business records are up for grabs?
Well, the Patriot Act permits federal agents to write their own search warrants. It doesn't call them search warrants. It calls them national security letters. But it's basically a search warrant in which one FBI agent authorizes another FBI agent to search and seize any business record that he wants. That profoundly violates the Fourth Amendment as well. That's been going on since 2001. Every time it's been challenged in court, every single time, the courts have found it unconstitutional. And the government has not appealed those findings because it's worried that those cases will eventually get to the Supreme Court of the United States. It just keeps moving on, moving forward, and following the statute that six judges have attempted to invalidate.
All right.
So it's a very bad, very, very bad state of affairs. I write these columns because people need to know what the government is doing in their name to trash the Constitution. Scott, I've enjoyed my time with you. I'm sorry I must run, but I got to get down to a studio, and I'm running out of time in which to do so.
Sure thing. Appreciate it, Judge.
All the best.
All right, y'all. That's Judge Knapp, the great Judge Napolitano from Fox News. And, yeah, you know, an interesting thing I was going to ask him if we had had the time. Oh, that's going to give me a busy signal in a second here. Let me see. One thing I was going to ask him if we'd had the time would have been about Donald Trump's proposals for what should be done with America's Muslims. I use the apostrophe S in a very, you know, property possessive way just to mock it. You know, they belong to themselves, not to this stupid country. Get it? But anyway, the thing is, Donald Trump says, hey, let's shut down their mosques. Let's make them wear identifying markers like, I don't know, green crescent moons on their shirts. That we ought to have a database of all Muslims. And what they're doing. And I guess instead of tracking what they think about American foreign policy, the government should track just how sincerely they believe in Islam, since I've been told that's the leading indicator of whether somebody wants to suicide bomb other people to death or not. I have a feeling that Judge Napolitano would say, actually, no, sir. The national government of the United States of America has no such authority to do any of those things. Full stop.
period. That's it. All their authority comes from the Constitution, and the Constitution doesn't give them that authority. Why, no, sir, not at all. I am sure he would say, I should write him an email and say, hey, maybe you should write an article about that. Somebody should. It's nice to have voices on the sort of constitutionalist right talking this way, because if it's just a bunch of sissy talk from the ACLU, then you got 150 million Americans who just won't hear it. But when it's the judge, and he can out-quote James Madison quotes out of you any day, you know, boy, I'm not articulate with the articulation, but the when he's Mr. George Washington up there, and no right-winger in America could beat him in an argument about what the law says, what the Constitution says about what our rights are, and that's handy for making sense in the minds of conservatives. That's what I'm trying to say. Oh, yeah? Well, what's Judge Knapp's problem then? He's a commie? No. Could it be he's more conservative than you? He cares more about the constitutional law than any Republican you've ever met. Might that be his problem? And that's why he's against, all the worst things our government does, like spy and kill and torture people, It's funny about that, isn't it? It's very funny about that. All right, yeah. Cool. I'm kind of glad that the judge left early, though, today, because it gives me more time to complain about other things. Here's something else I was going to ask him about, though, and it's worth bringing up in this context. Three French mosques closed in first major crackdown on places of worship after the Paris attacks. Guess what? They don't have a First Amendment in France. They've just got a lousy democracy that can do stuff like that. Well, you know, it's an emergency and everything. Real problem. And then, you know, the Texas government fighting about the refugees makes me sick, and it's stupid, and it's just politics. Nobody believes these refugees are terrorists, man. They're refugees. The hell out of here. It's just politics. You know, conservatives are frustrated that it's too politically incorrect to outright hate blacks anymore, so now they gotta find other people to hate, and so here. Alright, well. Yeah, cops. Nah, not cops. Yemen. Well, now I'll say this. Mark Zuckerberg, who I don't like, man. I quit Facebook because I don't like Facebook. I quit it a year and a half ago or so. That's pretty good, right? But still, the guy says he's going to give all his money to charity. And then ProPublica wrote an article saying, oh, all that means is he's going to create a foundation and not have to pay taxes. And I'm thinking, really? That is so sad. That is the knee-jerk liberal response. And they don't even stop to think for a minute. Do I really think that Paul Ryan knows how to spend this money better than Mark Zuckerberg? The guy that made it? Does that really make sense? No. But you can believe it if you shout it as a slogan. You don't have to stop and think about it. Oh, we're going to pay your fair share. Fair share of what? The world empire that's trying to get us into a fight with China? Over some islands you've never heard of? Halfway between there and the Philippines? Are you crazy? You want Mark Zuckerberg to give all his Facebook money to the Navy? I know you don't think that. I know you know better. Well, no, I think they should spend all the taxes being nice and taking care of people. Yeah, what? Really? You think the stormtroopers of death ought to spend their money in a way that's more, you know, kind of life-fulfilling, guys, and nice and friendly. That's a nice thing to want. Oh, see, I wasted the whole damn rest of the segment on that. I just saw that. People crying about that. That Facebook boy isn't going to be paying enough to the empire. As though it knows what to do better. Oh, and by the way, Al-Qaeda has taken over two southern Yemen towns because Obama and the Republicans and the Air Force and the Navy are flying, protecting them in their war against the Houthis.